Welcome to this exploration into the source material. So to kick things off, I want to talk directly to you, the learner. If you've ever stood inside the Mezquita in Cordoba, you've seen what looks like a glitch in history.
Oh, absolutely. The architectural palimpsest.
Right, because you're walking through this hypnotic forest of like 800 Islamic arches, and then bam, a massive Baroque Christian cathedral just erupts right through the center of the roof.
It's jarring. It's exactly what our sources call an aesthetic gatecrasher, one culture trying to write its story over another without quite erasing what was already there.
Yeah, and that brings us to our mission today. We are digging into historical records to look past that tired clash of civilizations narrative. We want to view the Mediterranean as this sea of faith. But I have a question right out of the gate. If these buildings are aesthetic gatecrashers, does that mean the history is just one long home invasion? Or, you know, is it something deeper?
Well, it's really a story of inheritance. I mean, for centuries, the Mediterranean was this quote-unquote Christian lake under the Roman and Byzantine empires. But in the 7th century, that entire world was shattered by what the texts call a thunderclap from the desert.
Meaning the explosive rise of Islam.
Exactly. It was sudden, and it changed the map overnight.
But I've always wondered how a massive empire like the Byzantines just folded so quickly. I mean, to use an analogy, it feels like a star athlete being forced to play a doubleheader who finally just runs out of gas in the final inning.
That is a perfect way to frame it. The Byzantines had just spent decades in an exhausting forever war with the Persians.
Oh, they were already tapped out.
Completely. They were bankrupt, their troops were exhausted, their borders were porous, and this all comes to a head at the Battle of Yarmouk in 636.
Okay, Yarmouk.
Yeah, so you have this brilliant commander, Khalid ibn al-Walid. He was often called the Sword of God. He basically trapped the much larger Byzantine army in this geographical bottleneck at the Roman bridge of Ain Dakar.
Wow, so he used the terrain against them.
He used the terrain to neutralize their numbers, yeah? And Byzantine grip on the region just snapped.
But wait, if you were a local living there, why wouldn't you, like, fight to the death to keep your way of life?
Well, that's the fascinating part from the sources. The conquerors brought in a system called the dhimmi.
The dhimmi.
Right. It offered a protected status to Christians and Jews. So, I mean, think about your own life for a second. If a new government showed up and said, hey, keep your religion, keep your local laws, just pay us a flat tax.
And that tax was actually lower than what the previous guys were charging.
Exactly. Significantly lower. So would you fight them? For a lot of people, the Muslim administration was simply a better business deal than the Byzantine tax collectors.
So it was stability bought through a tax code.
Yeah.
That is wild. And that stability eventually shifts the story from the bloody battlefield to the library, especially in Spain. Because by the 10th century, while the rest of Europe was arguably slumbering, you get Umayyad Cordoba.
Oh, Cordoba was the most sophisticated city on the continent. It was kind of the Silicon Valley of its day.
Yeah, you had figures like Ziryab, right? The Blackbird.
Oh, the Blackbird, yes. He was essentially a 10th century influencer. I mean, he moved from Baghdad to Spain and completely revolutionized everyday life.
From music to hygiene.
He literally introduced toothpaste, deodorant, and the concept of a three-course meal to Europe.
It is crazy to think that the quote-unquote civilized world was learning how to brush its teeth from Islamic Spain. But I want to push back on something here.
Yeah.
This whole idea of convivencia, you know, this golden age of coexistence where Jewish, Christian, and Muslim scholars all worked together. Was that a genuine friendship or just a practical arrangement?
It was almost certainly a practical arrangement born of necessity. I mean, knowledge was the currency. They weren't necessarily friends in our modern sense, but they realized they needed each other to, well, to translate Greek philosophy, advance medicine, develop algebra.
But they were preservationists.
Right. They were saving the foundations of Western thought that might have otherwise been lost. But history shows that these arrangements are incredibly fragile when the map starts to reset.
Yeah, because the borders do eventually harden again. I'm thinking of 732, the Battle of Poitiers. Charles Martel forms what the texts call a wall of ice.
Yeah, using heavy infantry and a dense phalanx.
Basically a human fortress to break the momentum of the Muslim cavalry. And that set a hard line for where Europe began. But then, 3 centuries later, everything flips again at the Battle of Manzikert.
Manzikert in 1071. That is where the Byzantine Empire truly begins its long exit from the stage. But, and this is key, it wasn't just the Seljuk Turks who defeated them. It was the Great Schism of 1054.
Right, the massive religious divorce between the Pope and Rome and the patriarch in Constantinople.
Exactly. Christian infighting was so bitter at that point that the Byzantines couldn't even get help from the West. They were fighting themselves as much as the Turks.
Wow. It's such a strong reminder that the geography of belief we see today wasn't inevitable at all. It was decided by individual choices, internal squabbles, and just the sheer luck of the draw on the battlefield. We're living in the aftermath of these aesthetic gatecrashers building over one another.
We really are. I mean, just think about the 400,000-volume library of Cordoba. It was later burned by fundamentalists on both sides who feared the knowledge it contained.
That is a staggering loss to sit with. And it leaves me with a final thought for you, the learner, to explore on your own. If those books hadn't been turned to ash, would the Renaissance have happened 5 centuries earlier? If knowledge is our shared inheritance, why do we so often treat it like a trophy to be captured rather than a bridge to be crossed?